Anthony Chow is co-founder of Agronomics, a UK publicly listed investment vehicle into cellular agriculture and precision fermentation. They have more than 20 companies in their portfolio, ranging from cotton, palm oil and hydrogen to chicken, fish and pet food, and so much more besides. Though we are still a few years away yet, some reports suggest that up to 60% of all physical inputs to supply chains could be produced using this type of biomanufacturing technology. Agronomics are campaigning also to educate and inform the public of its benefits to both the animals and the planet. I'm Alex Crisp and welcome to The Future of Foods, episode 40. Available also on YouTube. If you find this podcast or any others in this series useful, consider leaving a donation or else just a kind word. Okay, so welcome Anthony Chow, who alongside Jim Mellon is co-founder of Agronomics. Agronomics is a publicly listed company in the UK with a focus on alternative proteins and cell cultivation technology. It's one of the very few vehicles available for people to invest in this area. And they have a very interesting portfolio of companies from palm oil to dog food and everything in between. The dog food, interestingly, product has recently received regulatory approval in the UK, the first such cultivated cell product to gain approval. So thank you, Anthony, for coming on the Future of Foods interviews. I was wondering if you could just sort of introduce yourself a little bit and sort of tell us what the ethos is behind Agronomics.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. So, yes, as you mentioned, I'm a co-founder of Agronomics. We set this company up in order to focus on cellular agriculture. Because it is obvious to us, at least, that this is one of the key technologies that can be applied to combat so many aspects around sustainability of our food supply chains. And there's really something in it for everyone, right? It addresses issues around greenhouse gas emissions, but so far beyond that, water consumption, deforestation, misallocation of land. Then there's the animal welfare story, of course. But actually, what we think is really going to drive this industry forward is governmental concern around food supply chains. As I said, I think this is a really key technology. We can't really see any other technology that has the same potential to create a step change in the efficiency of production of all of these things, which have historically been derived from biological systems, primarily animals, but in some cases, plants like palm oil. So if this doesn't work, then there's actually not a lot of point in focusing on the energy transition as well. We need to pull all of these levers at the same time. But this really is one of the biggest levers out there.
So this is technology that is useful for the future and betterment of mankind. So do you think that kind of governments are taking it seriously in that regard? Are they investing enough?
Well, look, I think that there is a big difference between the two primary technologies that we focus on, right? There's the cell culture technologies for meat and seafood and pet food, of course. And then there's the precision fermentation for dairy, for eggs, palm oil, collagen, hydrogen even, and ammonia. And that falls into the sort of broader bucket of biomanufacturing, which has actually been used for a very long time, right? Insulin for type 2 diabetics was first produced using this technology back in 1978. But what has changed there is that the cost of genetically modifying these organisms has come down so dramatically that you can now apply it to relatively low value food products. So, you know, the Department of Defense and the Biden administration have sort of put forth these initiatives and these, you know, they're handing out money and there's a lot of tailwinds and government money that I expect is going to flow into the biomanufacturing sector, you know, in the coming years. Cultivated meat is getting some grant funding, but for sure, the negative headlines around that, there's much more of a culture war between the left and the right, seemingly, particularly in the US, around cultivated meat. So I think it will get there. I think consumers will ultimately be allowed to make the decision, but not without a few bumps in the road along the way.
Well, I mean, we'll come on to that a little bit later on about the kind of negativity around this industry. And I have noticed also that quite recently there's been some funding in the UK, like 38 million worth of funding in the alt protein project. So they are clearly taking it a bit more seriously. So you've invested in more than 20 companies and products in this area, including cultivated meat and plant-based meat, but also precision fermentation, eggs, leather, bioreactors, chocolate, cotton, pet food, palm oil, and even hydrogen. So which other products do you think will complement the list further that you haven't yet ventured into? Have you got anything on your radar?
Look, at this stage, our portfolio is pretty much complete, not least because of our cash reserves. But it is exciting to talk about the potential applications of this technology. McKinsey, within the last 12 months, put out a report suggesting that up to 60% of all physical inputs to today's supply chains could be produced using biomanufacturing. So that gives you some sense of the real potential of this industry. Whether or not all of those will ultimately be produced using biomanufacturing is a different matter. But clearly, there are many applications outside of this, including, moving back into the pharmaceutical world. There are a lot of key starting materials for critical medicines which could be produced using this technology. So, for all intents and purposes, there are an unlimited number of products that this could be applied to. But for the moment, Agronomics is quite pleased with its portfolio. We have all the really major categories: beef, pork, chicken, seafood, dairy, eggs, palm oil, etc., even collagen. But when you go below collagen, the next biggest market is probably an order of magnitude smaller than that again. So for sure, we've got the big ones. We've got the big ones that are going to make a difference from a sustainability perspective. But look, it's also worth pointing out that this is a transition away from animals and plants, biological systems, that is on the scale of the energy transition. We are talking about multi-decade, multi-trillion-dollar flow of capital that is going to be needed to see the real potential of this industry. But that's very exciting at the same time.
I mean, multi-trillion capital, that sounds like quite a big ask, isn't it? I mean, I spoke to Lane Clark at the Good Food Institute, and she said the same thing. She said that that sort of governments need to be investing billions of dollars in this in order for it to really work. I mean, do you think that's going to happen?
I think that the governments and what we're seeing with the Department of Defense in the US, they are beginning to put money to work and catalyze these things. I actually am hopeful that the private sector will be able to do this. But what is going to lead to us moving from this very slow part of that S-curve of adoption to get up here is these companies proving that they can produce these products at unit economics that are as cheap as, or ultimately even cheaper than, their conventional counterparts. We are not there yet. Maybe for some of the higher value proteins like human milk oligosaccharides and lactoferrin for use in infant formula, we're there. But for the real commodity proteins on the dairy side, casein and whey and egg proteins on albumin, we're not there. But once the first factory has been built and shows that it can be produced very cheaply, then it will be a race to see how many of those can be stamped out. Because there's, other than the conventional farmers that fear that they're going to be disrupted, which I would argue very strongly that they're not, given the size of these markets, there is absolutely no reason that these technologies should not be adopted really broadly. There is there it is only a net positive to humanity as a whole.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you can't stop progress, right? That's the...
That's it.
So 23 and 24 have been relatively quiet years for agronomics in regard to taking on new investments. And you said you're not interested in taking on any more rights now. Is that, I mean, is that, you know, you have 22 million in the bank as of March this year. So there are funds available. So is that more of that you want to keep investing in the companies that are already in the portfolio, or is it that you are keeping your powder dry?
Look, certainly we are keeping our powder dry. The venture industry as a whole has been very badly hit. There are few investors and allocators that are looking to put more money into the field of venture capital. Food tech, even within that, has, I believe, been hit worse than the average. And so what you're seeing from agronomics, I think, is quite typical amongst sort of our peers that are focused on, food tech more broadly. We want to ensure that we've got enough money to support any existing portfolio companies that that might need it. So we're being very cautious with our cash. We also need to be mindful that we are a public company and our share price is trading at a pretty substantial discount to net asset value. So we don't want to put agronomics in a position where it's forced to go out and raise money at a very deep discount just to keep the lights on. So we're going to keep a very good cash buffer there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I suppose some of the companies are raising their own funds and also listing.
That's right. In fact, if you look at our portfolio, since August last year, in one of the toughest fundraising environments that I can remember, our portfolio companies have raised $205 million. That was starting with Meetable, which closed August or September of last year. Lunalu raised $35 million. Onigo raised $40 million. Mosamit raised 40 million euros. These are actually heroic sums of capital in the current environment. And we think that Formo, our German dairy precision fermentation company, is going to be next with a pretty substantial raise. We have been seriously impressed by the ability of our portfolio companies to raise. Only good companies are getting funded in this environment. The other pretty compelling bit of information that I think investors should take comfort from in those fundraisers is that pretty much every single one of those has been either at flat or indeed a substantial increase to the valuation. So our net asset value has continued to increase, but unfortunately our share price has gone in the opposite direction.
I mean, the net asset value was increasing, but this last time it kind of decreased ever so slightly, didn't it?
Yes, it did, down about 3.3%, but that's a bit of a rounding error, probably a bit of FX in that as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned Solar Foods. That's clearly an exciting one. They won a prize with NASA recently for their protein production, and Meatly recently received regulatory approval, which I mentioned at the start of this for their dog food. The first cultivated meat product in the UK to get regulatory approval, which is quite a feat, I would imagine. The regulatory process being quite slow, I suspect.
That could have easily been years away. A number of other companies, the CEOs of other companies in the field, wrote to Owen and myself sort of congratulating us for the progress. Extraordinary, not only to achieve it in such a short time, but also with the relatively small amounts of capital. And that just is a very good example of how progress in this field is speeding up, right? Mosamit and Upside both started in 2016. Upside in particular has raised, I think, $600, maybe $800 million, and has only well, only in the last 12 months got its regulatory approval. So to do it on, you know, single digit millions is very impressive.
Yeah. So what's the what was the secret to get Meatly such quick regulatory approval then? Is it because the standards for dog food is slightly different to that of...
Yeah, definitely different set of standards for pet food versus human food. Politically, I think it's a pretty easy decision to make. You don't get much pushback from farmers. But really, you know, full credit to Owen and his team for, you know, collaborating with the UK regulators on this to get them up to speed. I think that there was some political motivations to show a bit of a Brexit win. Obviously, not been many of those, so that's nice. I wish that I could say the same positive thing about, you know, the prospect for human food being approved in the UK. I think that is going to be a much slower process, but at the same time, almost certainly faster than the EU.
Right. Yes. I mean, I it made me smile slightly that that in the UK the first creatures to try cultivated meat are, you know, our beloved pets. It kind of makes sense for the UK because we
look. The UK is the second largest pet food market, second only to the US.
Yeah,
the British are dog mad. Dog food being, you know, a much bigger portion of the market than cats, just in large part because of their size, but also their number. But yeah, look, it's a great pathfinder market for these companies, and I suspect that other cultivated meat companies will likely try and follow Meatly's path.
And of course, I think it's a third of all meat produced through farming goes to pet food.
Yes, something in that order. They have relatively high protein diets as well, which means that they, on a sort of a per kilogram basis, consume more protein than humans.
Yeah. So we've got Meatly there and Solar. Which are some of the other big winners? I know, obviously, Liberation Labs is a big one there, isn't it?
Yes. Look, I mean, I mentioned earlier that I think that there haven't really been any successes in this industry, and that is why investors have sort of shied away. We believe that Liberation Labs is likely to be the first major success story in the entire field. And by success story, I'm not talking about a business that's gone and raised hundreds of millions and is continuing the development of their product. I'm talking about a business that's generating cash, has a sustainable business model, you know, can then really accelerate the adoption of these proteins. You know, the nearer term opportunities definitely remain on the precision fermentation side. Onigo, Allgy Foods, Clean Food Group, this is, you know, egg proteins, dairy proteins, and palm oil. Really, really exciting companies within the portfolio and hopefully regulatory approvals, you know, relatively soon. And then on the cultivated meat side, on for humans, Lunalu is getting close, as is Meatable. Everything is taking longer than they had hoped, but you know, positive steps forward.
Yeah, because Lunalu, I remember last year you mentioned in a master investor interview that was on the horizon, but we haven't heard anything yet. But yes. Everything in this space is much slower than we think.
Yeah, there has been a bit of a sea change at the FDA. There was a change in personnel who was sort of a major champion for this sector and was very proactive at getting things through. That has changed, it seems that the level of detail demanded in the dossiers that these companies have to submit to the FDA has also increased. Now, so that is a frustration to some. Again, I think we backed some of the really good, credible companies, and they will be able to fulfill those requirements. A slowdown industry-wide.
Do you think that's political?
I just don't know. It's a reality. I mean, it's hard to imagine that it isn't, but I don't have anything intelligent to add on that, really.
All right. Okay. So with all this success and positivity, it's a shame that the share price is sitting so long in the doldrums, isn't it? The last couple of years, it's been kind of slowly sinking, and very little seems to sort of try and influence it in the other direction. I mean, what efforts are being made to try and boost sentiments in this industry that you know of, or that you're
Well,
doing?
look, I mean, just before diving into the things that we're trying to do, we do have to acknowledge that UK is out of favor. UK is money is leaving the UK markets, and that is reflected in redemptions from institutional investors that are focused on UK equities, particularly small caps. A couple of Agronomics' largest institutional shareholders have been sellers. And just on that high-level comment, I think we're on to 41 months of net outflows from UK fund managers. So that is problematic, and it's very hard for us to address that. Well, in fact, there's nothing we can do. Then venture is out of favor. I mentioned food tech is even more out of favor than venture as well. So, unlike 2020 and 2021, when the market was hot and money was, very actively flowing into alternative proteins as a whole, the absolute reverse of that is largely what has caused our share price to fall to where it is, and we are now trading at a, more than a 60% discount to our net asset value. It's very painful, and we are acutely aware of this. Now, in terms of what we're doing to address this, we have some social media campaigns lined up. There has been a, I think largely driven by TikTok, this move to short form video content. Investors' attention span is short, and we've got some pretty exciting content lined up for that, and both on Agronomics, but on our portfolio companies, and talking about themes that affect our portfolio companies. And then all the usual things, right? Attending conferences and speaking on podcasts like this. But I, can't deny that it is pretty tough going, and it has been for the last couple of years.
Yes, it is. It is. Do you think it might change? Do you think sentiments towards the UK market might change? I mean, I get the feeling that over the last few months there has been a small change in sentiment, at least, perhaps with the new government or something. Perhaps kind of, people are sort of shifting their attention back onto the UK.
Yeah, look, I don't know a lot about politics. I think that there was some hope that some stability and knowing who was going to govern was going to help things, which I think it did very briefly. But then obviously the various tax changes and things I think have probably changed things even in the last month or so. Look, our brokers and a number of other brokers in the City of London are talking about pretty substantial changes to the way that or tax advantages for pensions to allocate more to the UK. Look, that's above my pay grade, I think.
All right. Well, so you mentioned in some interviews that there is a deliberate attempt by certain media to discredit the industry. You actually said in March that there's one particular journalist who's kind of responsible for lots of the negative sentiments and sort of negative articles. So do you think this is a big problem? Can it be kind of, can it be balanced? Can it be kind of counter acted with use of TikTok and kind of various other sort of media attempts?
Look, firstly, that one journalist made published three articles in one in the New York Times, one in Wired, and one in Bloomberg,
What's the
all
name of the
fundamentally
journalist, by the way?
Joe Fassler.
Joseph.
They all said the same thing, essentially. They were all focused primarily on a company called Good Meat, which was an open secret. It wasn't a good company in the field, and then all those articles came out. To a lesser extent, Upside Foods also copped a bit of flak there. I don't know what his agenda is. He's a I guess, trying to make a name for himself to some extent. These headlines are really not helpful at all. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that most of what he said is factually correct. You know, this is a slow process, and there aren't going to be any sort of absolute step changes in the progress that we're making here. You know, it takes a long time for biology to be done properly and for the cells to be trained to perform in a certain way in the right, you know, cost-effective media, and so forth. So, look, those headlines are not helpful, but I think more than anything, they create a lot of questions in potential investors' minds that are looking to this field and thinking. So if a generalist investor starts looking at cultivated meat thinking it might be interesting, some of the first headlines that they will read in their desktop research will be those negative headlines, and I think it can scare people away. But it does, I believe, unfairly mask some really impressive progress that we're seeing at companies that are improving scale, bringing costs down. Yes, we're not there yet. None of them are. But you know, my resolve in funding these companies and seeing them through has not been deterred. That I think the good companies that emerge from this really challenging period are going to emerge with less competition and then, you know, more market share to themselves.
Yeah. I suppose the negative press towards cultivated meat was kind of coincided with a lot of the negative press towards plant-based foods, which...
I have no way of proving it, but there was definitely a lot of negative messaging, particularly around the health aspects of plant-based burgers and the ultra-processed nature of them. The challenge that they had is, one, they couldn't refute it. I mean, they are highly processed, high in sodium to make up for a lack of taste, and high in saturated fats. I think they've probably improved them since then, but you couldn't really argue against that. I think by far the bigger issue that has been learned and was obvious to us, hence we didn't invest in the plant-based products, is that you can't ask consumers to pay more for a product that is inferior. That is just not a recipe to getting repeat purchasing. And that was borne out of the numbers. Plant-based products have completely stalled in terms of sales growth and volume growth. You know, it is of some frustration to me that my LinkedIn profile continues to be littered with messaging around plant-based changing the world. I think that this is not in touch with reality. Notwithstanding that I have nothing against those products, but you know, they had their time, and unless they're enhanced with precision fermentation proteins or ultimately cultivated meat in the form of hybrid products, I just don't see that they're going to be good enough ever to get the conventional meat consumer to adopt them.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. You have a couple of plant-based companies on your portfolio. You have Rebellious Foods that make plant-based chicken, which yes, they say is as good as the real thing. It sort of tastes as good as chicken.
You know, I have actually never had the opportunity to try that product. It's only available in the US. That is a very modest investment for us, and by all accounts, it is actually doing very, very well. Revenue growth in the face of what is otherwise a stagnant or declining market. So they're taking market share. Yeah. And then the other slightly larger investment is Live Kindly. That is now the eighth largest plant-based company in the world. It has dramatically shifted its business model, somewhat like Beyond Meat. So it is generating really attractive, positive gross margins. It is fighting, swimming against the tide, but you know, some modest sales increases. So you know, I think, I mean, Rebellious is too small to really matter for agronomics investors. Live Kindly also, you know, quite small, but I think we'll be fine in those, also largely because we didn't get too excited and overpay. We participated very, very early. But Live Kindly should have a pretty sustainable business within the next 12 months.
Okay. So you talked about sort of multiple companies gaining regulatory approval. Can you predict or have a go at predicting which might be next? Do you think Blue Nalu are getting closer?
Oh, they're definitely getting closer. Are they going to be next? Look, I think the precision fermentation companies, Orgy, Odigo, Clean Food Group, likely to get approval, hopefully even before year end, in at least in the US for Orgy and Odigo. Clean Food Group, probably more UK focused for the moment.
I have a feeling that perhaps when Liberation Labs starts making revenue, that might be a bit of a turnaround for agronomics. So that's kind of start of 2025. Would you agree with that, or what?
Mid 2025, I think it's probably
Mid-2025.
closer. But yes, there's, this is a company that we, started backing Mark and Eitan, the co-founders there, from day one. So Agronomics owns a big chunk of that business. We've obviously put in quite a lot of money as well. But this is the clearest opportunity that I see for the sector and agronomics specifically, to start own it or to hold a business that is genuinely throwing off cash. And because agronomics owns such a big percentage, even if the business only generates $20 million per year, then you can do a very accurate and precise DCF to sort of determine the valuation there. And I think that could easily represent the market cap of agronomics as it stands today.
They have very they're very large ambitions, don't they, Liberation Labs? I did have them on this show, and they were talking about going into Saudi Arabia and Australia and all around the world.
I think that Liberation Labs has the potential to increase global fermentation capacity by about 50% in the next decade, if we get it right, which would be huge.
So that's a big deal then. So really, that's the jewel in the crown, would you say?
I look, it is, we have a lot of good companies, but this one is very exciting. And maybe I wouldn't say it directly to Mark and Ethan, but it is the most boring company in our portfolio as well. Building out the stainless steel drums, but from an investment standpoint, boring is good.
Well, Elon Musk has a company called The Boring Company, doesn't he? Yeah.
That's right.
So what are the biggest challenges facing the industry and right now, and how are they being addressed? I mean, how are we seeing, because I mean, even Meatly now, it has regulatory approval. It's not going to be producing products for at least another year or two, is it? So is this part of the kind of the slow scaling up of the industry? I mean, is this a big problem, and how is it being addressed, do you think?
Well, look, in my view, the two biggest challenges for this industry right now are access to capital and regulation. I think the regulatory story, notwithstanding my comments earlier about the FDA, it is becoming clearer in a lot of other jurisdictions. Singapore approved quail, Israel has approved some cultivated meat, India has approved dairy precision fermentation proteins, Australia, Impossible's heme product. So you can see that there are a number of jurisdictions opening up. But access to capital still remains the challenge. And that is why I'm so positive about our portfolio companies that have been able to raise pretty substantial Series B funding rounds and Series A in some cases. But I think that there is going to be a lot more carnage, and companies going bust, before the markets really, really start to, or before the funding environment starts to improve. For these portfolio companies. But I do think that with the regulatory approvals that our portfolio companies will get within their existing cash runways, should open up that next tier of investor, that growth equity investor that is, doesn't want to take a view on regulation, but is willing to take a view on the commercial path for these products.
Okay, so it sounds like you are still excited about the alternative protein cultivated meat space, the investment space. You have no regrets about this industry.
No, absolutely none. I mean, the more and I the more I learn, and I already know a lot about how fragile our food system is, the scarier or the more scared I get for my children in particular. I think that the other challenge for Westerners, rich Western nations, is that we don't get affected by food shortages in the same way that emerging markets do. So, out of sight, out of mind, but we suffer increasing prices, which are very unpleasant. And yes, they cause cost of living crisis. In emerging markets, they just starve. And I think that this, as I said at the very beginning, this is the only technology that is going to allow us to increase food production, but at the same time, decrease the resources and the carbon footprint, the broader environmental footprint, to decrease that at the same time.
Okay. I mean, I got. I mean, I became interested in this industry just because of the narrative, because of the science. It was so exciting. It's such a great idea that kind of animals can be saved their torture just by a bit of science, rather than kind of living creatures having to sort of go through what they have to go through. We can actually just sort of make it in a lab. And in my mind, it just sounded like a wonderful solution to an awful problem. So, I mean, I can't see why this narrative cannot be created in the minds of the masses with just a little bit of effort and energy.
Yeah, look, I mean, it is a brilliant application of science to start, producing proteins in this way. But the reality is, whether you like it or not, it is the unit economics that are going to drive this. If we don't get the unit economics down to be competitive or cheaper than conventional production, this will not have the impact that we need it to in order to dramatically slow, greenhouse gas emissions and all those other environmental issues. So, unit economics, sustainable businesses first, and all the positives that you know about will flow from that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Anthony. It's been a pleasure to have you on Future Foods. I just wanted to ask one more quick question. You have clearly tasted a lot of these products. Now, I suspect, I mean, I haven't, unfortunately, yet, but I suspect when you do taste them, it's slightly anticlimactic because it just tastes like. If it's cultivated chicken, it just tastes like chicken. If it's cultivated beef, it just tastes.
Absolutely spot on. It is very exciting until the point that you put it in your mouth and then you realize that it's just another chicken burger, it's just another sausage, it's just another bit of cheese.
Yeah, that's
But that is absolutely the goal, right? You don't want consumers to be able to have any perception that these products are different, and they're not.
yeah. Well, that's great. All right, well, thank you for that insight, Anthony, and I'll be watching closely the progress of agronomics, and thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.